ladies and gentlemen of all ages, boys and girls. Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Angry Meat Production. We appreciate you coming in and letting us be a part of your lives, week in and week out. We hope to do our best to present you with something that your eardrums delight in. Whether you're looking at us on YouTube or Rumble, or listening to us on Spotify, Google, or Anchor, or any of the other podcast services that we are currently on or trying to get on, we thank you. And if you don't mind, at the end of every episode, stop by, leave us a comment, leave us a like. If it asks for 5 stars, we'll take 5 stars, even if you don't like us. 5 stars are what it's all about. With that being said, we hope you enjoy our attempt to make our advocation our vocation. Ladies and gentlemen, let the games begin. We here at Angry Meat Production want to thank our sponsor, Mobile Notary Mindy. She's certified with the National Notary Association. She's also bonded and E&O insured. She offers a wide range of services, including wills, powers of attorney, medical documents, healthcare proxies, living wills, certification of trust, assignment of personal property, HIPAA waivers, advanced healthcare directives, and 99 verification. You can find her on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram at Mobile Notary Mindy. You can also visit her webpage at TexasMobileNotaryMindy.com. That's TXMobileNotaryMindy.com. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
Welcome, Angry Faithful. Today on What the Hell, we have a plethora of people here. Two comedians, one promoter, and one musician. We got Greg Duran. Well, just go Duran Duran. I don't care about the legal. He can deal with the legal aspect of it, not me. Chris, Jason Jasta, and Cynthia Anderson. Cynthia's gathered us all here today for some common reason. What are we even doing here? I don't know. You just said, "Hey, you want to do
Sunday?" That's a good question. I almost didn't make it. I think we scheduled this on, wasn't it like last Sunday, David, when I was like, "Hey, let's do this." And you're like, "Yeah, let's do it. And then everybody else is like, "Cynthia, what are you doing? It's too early. Like, you got to give us notice." Yeah. And then since it was a Sunday, I didn't write it down in my calendar, and had Chris not called to tell me about a crazy rabbit hole, I would have forgotten completely myself. So I'm glad we're here, because it's been entertaining already. Since I just interjected there, I'll introduce myself. I'm Cynthia Anderson, owner of Texas Brew Radio and the Texas State Songwriters Championship. Yep, got to do it backwards. This guy over here is Jason
Jobst.
I'm going to have to correct myself, because no one has corrected me, and it's been like 2 months. So Jason Jobst.
There you go. You got it.
Chris Crawford, hey, everyone. Up here. Yep. And backwards again, Greg. Yeah, and the reason we're all here is because we have an amazing event that's coming up January 13th at the Hilltop Barn in Cleburne, Texas, which is about 40 minutes outside of the Stockyards. We were reached out to by that venue because we had posted our vision on what we wanted to do with our organization of the Texas State Songwriters Championship. And they were like, "Cynthia, you don't have to wait 20 years to make that happen. We have the space, we have the property, we have everything you need, and we're waiting for you." And so in the midst of the chaos of the Texas State Songwriters Championship, I said, "Let's do it." And we turned our one-day event into a three-day event, and we had an amazing time at Horace Hall and Hilltop Barn. And we are excited to be able to utilize that property and that location to be able to help the downtown Stockyards support the artists and bring people to the area. Because a lot of things in the Stockyards between taxes and all of that, everything is super, super expensive. Just in the week that we hosted our Songwriters Championship, there was like three or four venues that closed down that were unexpectedly closed in Fort Worth. And so being able to, you know, pull my connections that I spent the last 20 years creating and pull all these networks together and pull all these other platforms together that have the same vision as us and be able to create a space that really does care about the artist and the entertainment. I mean, that venue is like $2,000 a night to rent out, and they are giving us the venue to help promote the songwriters and help support the local community. Like just this event on January 13th out at the Hilltop Barn, Jason Jops, I'm just going to
get it wrong again, but that's okay.
Jason Jops is, he does a lot to work with Forever Homes Pet Rescue. I've seen him post several events that he's done in collaboration with them, and they are a Fort Worth nonprofit. So being that we're in Cleburne, we want to support Cleburne nonprofit, but since they are in Fort Worth and we have some of our shows already in Fort Worth, that's where the Texas State Songwriter Championship home is. That's where our major events are. Since he works with them, we decided that we are going to let them take collect the monetary part of it. But we're also going to do a pet supply drive for the two local nonprofits that are coming, which would be Mutts Galore, which has puppies that they're bringing out for adoption, and then Foundation of Caring Animal Supporters, which has kittens that they're bringing out for adoption. Both animal rescues are located right there in Cleburne. So that's two local charities and another one that we're able to support just in this first show. That's pretty exciting. And I'm even excited. So originally we set the show with Jason and we weren't sure yet who we have multiple comedy promoters. So we know comedy's covered and we weren't sure yet who our guests were going to be. And I've talked to Jason knows for sure that as this has started coming together, it's just like missing puzzle pieces just keep getting put in place. And it's been just beautifully working out. So I find out from Mike with MSMP. Did I say that right? Or is it MSPN?
MSPN, Mike Shields Production Network.
See, dyslexia. I gotta love it. So he reached out to me and told me that Chris was coming. And so I'm like, hey, Jason, guess what? We found out, you know, Chris is going to be the comedian. And then Jason filled them in on what you thought when you first saw that Chris was going to be.
When I saw his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw his name is Crawford. And it's interesting. So several years ago, I started to do my lineage and everything. My grandmother is a Crawford. And so I was able to delve down into that. And Crawford's a Scottish name. And it's a pretty pretty powerful, strong clan. One of my great grandfathers William Wallace's mother was a Crawford. And so that means that her brother and her sons, nieces, nephews, stuff like that, fought with him to free Scotland. So those would be both of our, I guess, both of our great grandfathers. So, but it's kind of cool how my grandmother was a Crawford and then he was a Crawford. But I let them know that. And Cynthia was like, whoa, that's pretty cool.
Right. Well, actually, what Cynthia said was that's really cool because next year we can host a Scottish Heritage Festival with the fun. Two of you and make a huge production out of it.
Oh, you know what? Here's a weird fact, and it'd be an odd celebrity like cameo, right? Because if you had me at that, I will tell you that I am, since 2012, the holder of the fastest indoor marathon run by a man wearing a kilt. Yes, it's very specific. It was not broken. It was set, and nobody else wants it, so it's mine.
Did you go full Scottish? Did you wear underwear?
No, it turns out those kilts are heavy. I ought to come back a lesser man after 26 miles.
I made the mistake of We had at one of the venues that I worked at before, like I was officially his manager as well, but unofficially I was under him. Like, he just didn't know that I had authority over him because it would have been a conflict of interest and we wouldn't have been able to work together. So I called his bluff on whether he was wearing his kilt properly or not. And let me tell you, we were all surprised.
Definitely
interesting. But we can, with the connections that we have, we could absolutely host some sort of like reenactment, like whole throwdown festival of something of that sort. And we encourage, like, if you have ideas of events that we can host out at the barn, or you have people who normally host events who have events who are looking for locations, absolutely send them to us. We have March 16th, there's going to be a midget wrestling thing with a live band going on. That's actually also the same day as our female songwriter champion, songwriter of the year contest. At Horace Hall, which I just got off the phone, which is why I was almost late to this, with the owner of Horace Hall. And so they have an annual crawfish boil. And it so happens that it falls on the same day. So from like noon to five, the day of the female songwriters contest at Horace Hall, there's going to be the catfish or the crawfish. That's a very different thing, Cynthia. The crawfish.
Yeah. I don't want boiled catfish. I'm good with that.
You're like, they're like, yeah, we're not coming. But the crawfish boil is happening the same day. So to get into the crawfish boil, it's a $20 general admission fee. And then they're going to have crawfish available by the pound. If you purchase a ticket to see the female songwriter of the year competition, you're going to get a voucher for 2 pounds of free crawfish. So you can buy that $20 admission to go see the songwriters competition, get the $20 admission to go to the crawfish boil early and just enjoy. They have like an all you can eat and they have all you can eat something. I don't know all the details yet, but I do know that there's going to be bands during the day and it's going to be a lot of fun and they can go early and get a voucher for 2 free pounds. So.
Okay.
So, what were you going to say, Craig, after the Scottish stuff?
Who, me?
Yes.
Oh, nothing. Oh, actually, well, I was going to point out that he actually has a really good picture of himself wearing that kilt. Chris Crawford. Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll make you send stuff. I'll send proof.
Yeah, so, for real. Good picture.
You don't have to put on OnlyFans, right?
No. I do have to go live on Clapper, though.
No, but there is like a lot of talk that, you know, comedians.
That sounds like a D&D.
There is like a lot of talk. Like, if comedians want to make it in this business, they got to wear a dress at some point. And Chris has already done that.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. It's a big, hey, it's a warrior skirt, okay?
Yeah.
Chris was telling me, and like, so the Texas State Songwriters Championship at the beginning of the year was just a songwriters contest. And the end of the year was a whole organization and movement. And it's about mental health awareness and breeding a network of people who are in the entertainment industry to support other people that are in the entertainment industry, regardless of whether they're in radio or whatever aspect, comedy, music. And so, me and Chris were talking about how hard the journey is for entertainers in general, period. And how, like, you can be a musician or you can be a comedian, and they're people, when you're struggling, are going to tell you the same thing they tell a stripper: go get a real job. What are you doing with your life? And so we were talking about the difference in being a musician or being a comedian. And Chris was like, well, being a musician, you hit that one lick people like, and they're listening to that once a week, at least one, you know, every day. And for the first couple of days, they're listening to it, you know, for once an hour, that one song, that jam. He said, a comedian, you get how many times? They're going to listen to you how many times? Excited about it.
Oh, you can tell them the joke that'll make them fall off their couch. But after their third time hearing it, they never want to hear it again, because there's this big reveal. Like, you hit them with you hit them with this twist, because it's a pretty much a setup. You know, you set the premise, And then what really pulls that punch is the twist, because they don't see the twist coming. And because there's that surprise element that went somewhere that they did not expect it to go after you've already led them to believe it's going somewhere else, that's the setup punch. So once you've already given them the reveal, they're never going to see that joke the same again. That's like a magician showing you how they did the trick. Once you know how the trick is done, it's no longer the same. So a song, if he plays Piano Man, the whole room's going to sing Piano Man with him. But if I tell one joke by Seinfeld, my career is over.
Yeah. There's a lot of, what was it? I was looking at something that they were talking about joke stealing and how you could do it. Like if the person's dead, you're just redoing the whole joke, but you're saying, hey, this is a joke. Like, I think it was like, Red. It was old, Stanford and Son. Who is the, main actor for that?
Stanford and Son.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
I'll think of it in a second. It should be. I should have that stuff.
Red Fox. Red Fox.
Yeah. You can do a Red Fox joke, but you just have to say, "Oh, like this is an old joke from Red Fox." Do the joke. It's not really stealing because you know, one, he's dead. He's not going to use it anymore, and you're just basically revamping his stuff. But if you go in and do what Carlos Mencia did,
yeah, it's a weird topic. I didn't know we'd get in here, and I don't know that I don't know how much Jason will appreciate this, but I think or either that or he'll be right on my side. But I think that I hope it's the latter. But musicians they can grow up, and you know that once they've learned how to play their instrument, and once they know how to do what they do, they're able to do cover songs. In fact, they can even make a decent amount of money off of doing cover songs. And that's them learning their craft and learning their style and learning their genre and learning the business. A comedian we can never, ever tell anybody else's joke. So right out of the gate, we suck for a long time because we're learning how to write. We're learning our voice, our direction, and our style, and hoping to God that other people will appreciate that once we get it figured out. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to say that we have it harder than musicians, because if you asked me to play guitar, you would have to give me years. But it's one of those things where there's no such thing as a cover comic, right? I can't take a master's work, learn their timing, learn their delivery, and learn how to do it based off of how the example's been laid, and then repeat it until I figure out how to do it on my own. I have to figure out how to do it on my own right from the jump. That's why you don't hear about a comedian until they're about 10 years in.
Yeah. Well, it's like, with musicians and everything, Twisted Sisters, Dean Snyder was talking about how he was like broke for like a couple of years. He was doing like odd jobs, and then he wrote a song for Celine Dion, and that's how he made his millions. I mean, yeah. you can basically, you know, go in, buy, do something that not even for your genre. You write the song for somebody else, and you basically quit making music for a while, and you make millions off of that.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, but the chances of that happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the wild thing too, is we all want to bet on our own talent, but really what we're betting on is that we have enough talent that we have properly prepared ourselves to meet the, success is preparation, when preparation meets luck. So we want to be as prepared as we can be should that lucky moment come, mm-hmm. because it would suck for that lucky moment to come and us not be prepared to take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Jason, did you start doing charity work and just added in your music, or just started?
No. So I actually right now I'm. Can y'all hear me?
Oh yeah.
I just think.
Okay, that was weird.
Thanks.
Right? So. Yeah. So I started doing. I started when I was probably about 15 or 16 years old, and I was started playing in my church, which that's what a lot of musicians do, because that's, you know, a really great place to learn and then to practice vocally. So I started probably 15 or 16, and then I did that for a very long time. The charity work comes in, well, ironically, my wife's name is Charity, but she was a vet tech for about 20 years, but she had to go through some operations where it basically made her retired, and she kind of didn't know what to do. She wanted to help, but didn't know how to do it because she couldn't work at the veterinarian's office anymore. So then we started getting into fostering dogs and everything like that. And with her 20 years of veterinary experience, she was able to help this rescue that Cynthia just mentioned. And then the music kind of came together with, we got a litter of 18 puppies from one dog, gave birth to 18 puppies. And we were trying to get them adopted and to do different events in Allen. And so I offered my services. And so I set up all my gear and everything to kind of get publicity to get people in. So that's how it kind of came together.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Now, Greg, when did you start doing comedy?
I probably started doing comedy like maybe about 6 years ago. Around 2017. And I was picking up some pretty good momentum for a little bit, but then COVID happened. And then, you know, we all had to take like a little bit of a break. But here and there, me and my friends would find like ways around it. Like, you know, we were still able to do shows. And but it's been fun since then. Like, it's been fun ever since I started. So I started doing like whenever, like, my cousin, he was a DJ, and he just, like, I told him I wanted to go out there and tell some jokes, and he went out there and he told me, yeah, go for it, you know. So like, that's where it started.
Well, I like that he said that he started finding ways, because what we have is here in San Angelo, we only have a town of about 100,000 people. And when everything shut down, there was no opportunities for comedians whatsoever. So kind of like the 1920s when they had rent parties and stuff like that, we kind of went old school, because like what he has behind him in his little apartment, he has an entire stage. It's a brick wall, all the decorations. There's some comedy posters up there. He made that improv sign that he hung up at the top there. So what is he's sitting in a comedy and also he's raised up on or behind him, there's a raised stage. So right there behind Greg in his apartment, that one wall is his comedy club, where four or five of us would come over and do an open mic and run material.
Yeah, we've had plenty of practice sessions out here before. It's been fun. It's been I get to invite some of my neighbors, and they'll watch us too. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Man, I keep on remembering stuff, but I just can't remember names and everything. But there was a comedian back in the 70s that did the same thing. He ended up making a movie. Eddie Murphy did like a
Dolomite.
Dolomite
was the name of the movie.
Dolomite.
Yes. He ended up like doing comedy in his doing the recordings and everything in someone's house, and ended up making a small amount of money so he could actually do a movie. I mean, it's just once you have some kind of you're hitting a wall, you reinvent everything to where you can actually still do what you wanted to do. Yeah. You're manifesting your dream, basically. Yeah.
Oh, I'll extend on that too. We have four different house stages here in San Angelo. So we had our little underground micro tour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris has a real good one too. He has a real nice like area where we can put the stage and everything set up. And then we got another buddy of ours, Ryan Dale. He's got one at his house. So we all get to like just jump back and forth and go to each other's houses. And, you know, that's the number one thing too. Being a comic in a small town like this, you got like, at least you can surround yourself around people that want to do it too. And that motivates you more, you know, like it keeps you going definitely out here.
And it's wild.
That's definitely why we're trying to do the whole network. And like we had talked about on our December 9th with our finale on how we want to do a collaboration of the year, which would be multiple songwriters working together on a song, and how we wanted to develop battle buddies within the group so that they had, you know, that network to call, hey, you know, I don't have a gig tonight. Are you gigging tonight? Where are you at? Can I stop in and play on your break? Because then that's an audition and possibly end up being another gig. and then also, you know, feeding off of each other that way, and then being able to just talk about the things that you need to talk about with somebody that can relate to what you're talking about and understand where you're coming from. It's really a big deal.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And like, and that's what they say, is they say that your power is in your network, right? And the larger your network is, the more opportunity that you get. So absolutely. Thank you, Cynthia.
Now with, how the internet's working right now. I'm on like 16 different platforms and everything just to get my stuff going, and it still hasn't in 3 years, going, and I'm probably hit like 14 countries getting all my stuff out. But how's that helping you guys? I mean, you got like big time stories like Oliver Anthony for music and everything just popping off, and Matt Rifle for his stuff for comedy and everything. I mean, he's been doing it for like 15 years, but everybody's just now noticing him. How much have you noticed that how just doing anything in the social networking has helped you guys out with your chosen stuff, comedy, music, whatever?
I think I'll let somebody else talk. I'm doing a lot.
Yeah, you are.
I was gonna say, like, it does help out being on like podcasts and anything, because, you know, like, it's helped me get like out of town gigs. You know, people that have actually been able to watch your podcast and they see, hey, Greg Durant, let me look up his social media, and all right, yeah. I've been out to like San Antonio, you know, a little bit further than what I'm used to, but it's because of social media. You know, it helped me out a lot so far. So I like it. I like being on anything I can get on.
Yeah, we need to get you on Clapper, because that app, like, it's a free speech app. A lot of our artists have gotten on there. We have an amazing support group and support network on there. Jason's been on there since November 4th and has over 5,000 followers. Like, to be able to do that on Facebook is hard. Like, it's going to take you like a year, and then something crazy is going to have to happen. I mean, the Leif Shively band are an exception. They started the year off at 2,000 followers. They now have 44,000, but they have a lot of things going on. And that's another thing that we aim to help the artists with is social media presence, because being able to, like, Clapper Force is set up to where you have to post videos. You can't just text what you want to say. You have to say what you want to say. And so that's helping artists with speech development and presentation. Once they get a little bit more comfortable with that, then we're going to throw Canva at them and have them start working on, you know, their own design work, because you can fill so much content with what you have to say, but you can get creative and make cool little videos, you know, to fill in when you're tired of talking. Because I know y'all have been on there, like, after the show, like, I have not completely been on there. I'm like, I'm done updating people. Like, I'm peopled out for a minute. Like, I can only handle so much. But we have artists like Jeremy Wayne McKern that got on there, November 4th or something. And he was on there for like 6 or 7 weeks and had over 11,000 followers. Great opportunity, and it's set up like a website. Like, you can literally sell your t-shirts right there on the app. You can set up subscription tiers to where they can contribute monthly. So like $5 a month, okay, you get put in a raffle to win a free sticker once a month. What's that going to cost you? 35 cents? They paid $1. Like $5 a month, you know, you get put in a raffle to win a free download, whether that be a digital file of comedy or a digital file of music, you know. $20 a month, okay, you get put into a raffle to win a free t-shirt or a free ticket to one of my shows. You know, you can set that up however you want to, and then have monetary on monthly supporters, as long as you're keeping them engaged and keeping stuff that is engaging to them. If you're posting a lot of like repeat content, then it's I always tell everyone to go look at Coffee Anderson. Coffee Anderson is an amazing performer. I love him and Zach Webb. Both of them are very good social media presence. You can learn a lot from them, just like Zach Webb. He was having meetings. He was going to lunch with the mayor in the town that he was performing at. That's out of the box thinking. That's what's going to gain you support in those communities. okay, you have a comedy show in Cleburne, Texas. You know, get with the officials. There's only so much that I can do as far as reaching out, but those little things matter. Little things like, okay, you have a gig at ABC location on this date. Take your show flyer, go to googlemaps.com and contribute that show flyer to that place. Because Google Maps, so many people don't utilize it. It's literally the tool that everybody uses to find out what the hell's going on. And it's free to promote your business on there. So many people have no idea. They don't do it. They stay to Facebook where they get 10 views on their photos instead of 10,000. I don't understand why everybody's so stuck on that app. I hate it. The app doesn't like me equally, I think, because I don't have room in my heart for hate, and that app has that from me. But there's so many other outlets and things, and we're teaching all of these little tricks to the trade, to our artists, and to the people that are in the community that we work with. Just like today, I saw some business message me. Okay, or they didn't message me, they followed me on Facebook or they liked a status or something. So I went and looked at their business profile. What did I see? I see that whenever they make a post, they make the effort to tag their location. Great idea. It works if you use it properly. However, they were tagging their location as their own venue, which does what? Nothing. It just makes the ad pop up on your venue's page, which is where you posted it anyway. So what's the point in that? None. I actually took the time to message them and said, hey, I want to share some useful information with you. When you set your business post, I see that you're tagging the location. However, if you would tag the city that you're located in instead of the location, then anytime someone looks up Cleburne, Texas, for instance, on Facebook, that's going to pop up in all of those filters. So if someone's trying to move to town and they want to know what's going on, you tagging your own location isn't going to tell them, but you tagging the city that you're located in is going to tell them everything that they need to know. And so little things like that. And then of course I added into the message, check out what we're up to, TexasStateSongwriters.com. We would love to get our artists at your venue. And we want to do little things like Braden Southard, for instance, high energy, great guy, very accepting. You can watch his clapper and he'll go from rapping in his cowboy hat with a dark skinned individual to telling you Bible verses in church. Like, he is just all encompassing and basically I'm not going to say 100% that he is our mold or our motto, but we did give him the title of social media mascot because he is doing all of those right things. He's doing all the little things. He's staying consistent. And so I want to do things like have remote talent search, shows at different venues where we have, you know, we set the date, Braden goes and just hangs out and hosts an open mic and then reports back to us, which artists he thinks have, you know, have what it takes to win the championship. And then we reach out to the venue and see if they would want to do the sponsor package and sponsor that artist to come to the show, because then the artist gas money is covered. The artist entry fee is covered. The artist not out of pocket for anything. And then that venue is going to get tagged anytime that artist is promoted. So for like the whole year. So let's say X, Y, and Z sponsored Jason. Now, every time I share Jason Spotify, it's going to say sponsored by this venue. So it's going to help the venue. It's going to help the artist. It's going to make coming to the competition not another freaking fee that the artists have to pay. And it's going to enable us to reach out to more songwriters in Texas that haven't seen our posts, that, you know, maybe weren't aware of what we were doing, and be able to help develop them as songwriters as well. And especially if they're already gigging at the venue, then they're obviously already have what it takes because they're getting paid by someone to perform. So, we have a lot of awesome stuff coming up. I'm really excited about it. And I'm really excited that you guys believe in our vision enough to come out and especially drive. These two, I got it right. The only way is up. Got that one wrong. But these two are driving for like 6 hours to come out and entertain you guys and pack the laughs. And we do hope that you come out and support it. We have a lot of amazing things going on. We have puppies. We have kittens. Oh my, comedy music. There's air hockey out there. There's throwing axes. There's basketball games. There's glow in the dark soccer. I'm forgetting something. There's a lot of fun stuff at the venue. And it's basically like just going to a party at your grandma's house. It's a private venue. It's not a bar. There is alcohol available, but it's like you can bring your kids. Like, it's all ages. I mean, obviously you have to be accompanied by an adult if you're not 21, but it's a community event. We have Johnson County Community Radio is coming out with a tiny home from Keith, Sheds by Keith, and interviewing the artists at 8 o'clock when we first get there. Mutts Galore, Bringing Puppies and Kittens. I already said that. So this is what the thing that I threw in, though. If you bring an animal product to the show and you're buying tickets at the door, we will give you your tickets for half off if you bring pet, like so dog food, cat food is always needed, chew toys, blankets, whatever pet items. We're getting together. Obviously, these artists need compensation, but we're doing this as a community and an awareness move. And we really hope that you guys decide to come out and support it. But I said Sheds by Keith, but Johnson County Community Radio is going to be coming out and doing live interviews. I already said that. I'm done. Fired. tickets are available. TexasStateSongwriters.com/events. Chris has a bunch of corny jokes for you.
Oh my God. You don't know.
I think I posted the video in the event.
You don't have to do like a 30-minute set and you're very underprepared for it and you just get up there and just wing it, you should be good. No one in this this like area would do something like that to somebody. Would you, Cynthia?
So I want to tell you that you guys may have seen me getting up and running around the room. I always have absolute chaos whenever I'm on the show with David.
I'm literally got two episodes where I'm basically a pain in her ass.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's on video feed, unfortunately, because he posted that stuff. So he has a video of me digging in my shorts. Because we were sitting outside on the bar patio and a bug flew all the way in to my shorts and I felt it on my hip. And then I was like, he saw me brush it and I was like, cool, I'm good. Like, I don't know what that was, but it creeped me out, you know, because it touched my skin and it was probably a bug. And then all of a sudden I felt it and I was jumping up off that patio, off that bench. And I'm literally hands all the way down, get this thing out of my hands. I have no idea what's even in my drawers. And he is just laughing so hard because the time before that it was on the same bench, but we had been sitting out there for a while and it was a lot warmer and I had leggings on and I had tried to scoot over closer to the mic and ended up with like 1,000 splinters in my backside, which I was still picking out of my backside at 2:30 in the morning when I was trying to close the bar. Those are my experiences on the show. I tried to shut the window because the kids decided that the kids started playing their instruments out in the garage. So I tried to shut the window and knocked my energy drink on the floor. It's been eventful over here. I'm sorry you missed the fun.
I got it. Hold clips. On.
Oh gosh. Oh.
I'm done with this whole something. Wanting to be in my ass shit. I have a bug down the back of my fucking head. I'm so glad I got this on video.
We're digging in.
This is freaking hilarious. She's literally jugging in her ass. Oh my God. I thought I felt something. Did you see me put my hand back there a minute ago? I was like, no, there's something biting my fucking ass right now.
That was good.
Hey, it's posted again, by the way.
Do I?
He said he just posted it again.
Oh, Lord. Oh man, yeah, epic. It, like there's always been some sort of shenanigans every time I've been on this show.
Yeah, last time she came over here, I had her because I got like an axe and a metal case. I made sure that she was on the other side. She's like, "You want me to sit over here?" Yes, because there's like sharp objects and you could die from this stuff. She's like, "What do you mean by?" How many times have we been on this and something's almost killed you? Oh, damn. Right.
Yeah.
You got a valid point there.
Bubble wrap. I need bubble wrap.
Yes. Yeah, especially. Well, it's the whole reason why it's like I looked at the calendar. I was like, I can go this weekend, go to the event. No problem. And then I thought back is every time I go hang out with her, something horrible. We had last time I went to go to the bar with her to go watch a band. It started raining and I ended up helping out the band moving all their electronic equipment into their.
That was when the microburst happened. Yeah. That was when I was like, there is about to be a tornado. And the owner of the venue was like, "No, there's not, Cynthia. The weatherman said it's not even going to rain." And I was like, "Do you have tarps? Because my band is outside. They are going to need to cover their stuff." And I had just sent them there as a referral because after my last venue experience, I'm just not really booking anything around here. And I had to cancel a lot of shows on somebody. So I was like, you know what? He's like,
She froze.
He said, "It's not even supposed to rain." And I was like, "Whatever." And I was like, "It's not my show. I'm not worried about it." Because the band manager had come over and asked me to worry about it. So I was going to worry about it. And so then I was like, "Well, it's not my problem." I asked him if he could at least find some trash bags. 5 minutes later, I'm sitting over on the bench and I look over to my shoulder and you can see the rain coming down across the field on its way. And when I had first pulled in, I saw three shelf clouds stacked on top of each other. My boyfriend was like, "Oh, that's going to make an amazing backdrop, all the lightning in the background of the band." I was like, "Yeah, until it rains." Yeah. So I look and I was like, "Yep, not going to rain, but I'm taking my ass inside." And so I grabbed all of the crowd that we had. There was like five beers and I was trying to carry them. And I got like halfway and all my hair just whipped around my face, like both directions and in the beer. And I was like, "I can't even see to walk and I don't have any free hands." So I somehow made it in the bar and sat everything down. And then I went to go back out to help. And when I opened the door, I saw the rain was going sideways. And I was like, "Yep, not my job." And my boyfriend and David had stayed out there to help. Well, I was standing there and then someone came in with a microphone and they were like, "Hey, I think the microphone got wet." And they shook it and sprayed me all over the place. And I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to say that that's definitely wet. Yeah. Give it to me." I was frustrated at this point because I had tried to avoid this. And then David and the owner and everybody else walk in and they look like they had jumped in a swimming pool and came out the other side and then walked in the bar. Like, not even kidding. And I just looked at them and I was like, "Hey guys, it looked like the rain missed us." And the owner was so mad. He was like, "Cynthia, you need a different job." He's like, "They said it wasn't going to rain." And then like a couple minutes later, like all hell broke loose. Over like literally the building next to the condo that I had just moved out of January of last year, just it looked like somebody set off a bomb. Like the whole grocery strip mall was sitting on top of the venue next door. Like it just, and they said it was a microburst, which is like a very rare thing, but basically it is the equivalent of a bomb going off. I was like, yeah, that was crazy. That was definitely a crazy experience.
And this Christmas, my week I had off, I went down to go to another podcast to visit with those guys because they were doing like a big Christmas thing. Started hanging out with this couple, started talking to this beautiful woman, and we'll get back to that one. Well, I ended up helping them out. Because the girlfriend was like, "Hey, can you like help me put my boyfriend into the Uber?" I was like, "Yeah, sure, no problem. You know, I'm not drinking. I gotta go home after this." I get them in the Uber. And I was like, "Hey, y'all have fun. Hope y'all make it home. I'm going to go use the restroom. Go use the restroom, come back outside, have a cigarette. And everybody is outside. I'm like, man, what's everybody doing out here? What's the Uber driver being doing out of it? Oh, no. The Uber driver was drunk, hit one of the hostess's wife vehicle. I ended up getting the couple stuff, moving it out of the Uber again. I talked to the couple, and I was like, hey, where are y'all coming from? She's like, well, we live in North Carolina. It's like, I'm not driving to North Carolina. And they're like, well, we're visiting his mother in Round Rock. I was like, oh, that's on the way to freaking Wichita Falls. I'm good. I'll take y'all home. So, but I ended up taking them home. It's just every time I go out, it's either a hassle and halfway there. But the beautiful woman that I was talking to, her name was Audrey. And then when I got home, I started like trying to look her up and find her. I found her. Y'all guys know who Corey Chase is?
Corey Chase.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Apparently she's everybody's lovable stepmom. She's a porn star.
Oh, okay. All right. I got you. Yeah. But I'm just going to act like I didn't know her. I do know her. I do. Yeah.
Personally, we go way back.
Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Let me call her mama.
I tried to help her out of a dryer.
All right. So, Jason, tell us your story. Tell us how long have you been in music? What inspired your style?
So, I mean, like I said, started a long time ago. Played in different churches and whatnot. But my music was never really in my family, but it kind of was. My parents didn't actually play. I grew up in Memphis. And my godfather is Jimmy Jameson. He's the lead singer of Survivor in the '80s and the '90s. If you don't know who Survivor is, Eye of the Tiger, Burning Heart, Search is Over, Baywatch, theme song, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so I kind of, you know, got into music and, you know, my mom used to play records all the time and everything. When I met my wife, she brought me here to Texas, and I didn't get into doing country music until probably about 3 or 4 years ago when I needed to find extra ways to make money, because when you play in churches, it's just really just Sunday. You can't play any other night of the week. And so so I started going to open mics and started doing, you know, different open mics in different areas. And then met some people that were like, hey, you're pretty good. Do you want to, you know, host the open mic? I was like, sure. And so then I started to get paid for it, started to host some open mics. And then I started to write my own material. And then as they more and more people started hearing the songs that I was writing, they really liked them. I've had grown men coming up to me crying, saying, I don't know what it is about that song, but you know, you just, I love it, blah, blah, blah. And, so yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. I have, speaking of social media, so, I mean, I got on TikTok, but TikTok, that's such a pain in the ass. Facebook, you can get people to follow you and whatnot, but there's not a whole lot. Clapper, like she said, I have a lot of people that follow me on there. A lot of the connections that I've made have been through other musicians, through other artists. I'll go and I'll support them at their show and I'll hang out with them, and then I'll get to meet different people. Then I'll get invited to a different venue, or I'll, you know, go speak to the venue personally and get to go play there. And but it's been where I've gotten to get a lot of good contacts with people that are a lot higher up in the industry than me. And they see who I know and who I trust and who trusts me. And so yeah, I mean, it's just, it is what you know, Chris. I mean, you have to know how to play, you have to know how to sing and all that stuff. But the music industry, it's a lot about who you know, because you get those opportunities because of people that you know. You know, and the rule is always kind of in all of these industries, you know, if you're not a dick, then people want to do work with you. But that time that you're a dick, you know, people will remember that for a long time. And so, yeah, but yeah, it's been fun. I mean, we've gotten to play at a bunch of different venues. Cynthia's thing actually came up because of somebody else that I know, who actually couldn't make it to the songwriting event. But I saw that he posted something. I was like, oh, that looked pretty cool. And it wasn't like a typical songwriter thing. Like typical songwriter thing, you pay $20 a song and then they just look at that one song. But I saw that the structure of the Texas State Songwriters was a little bit different. You could play multiple songs and, you know, you get to come in and then play those multiple songs in front of people and whatnot. That's typically not how a songwriting contest goes. And so I piqued my interest and my curiosity. And so I got entered into it and got to meet Cynthia and, you know, some other people. And yeah, it's just growing from there. So,
Chris, why don't you go ahead and tell us, Joe, how you got everything going and everything, how your world's going into now?
Oh, yeah, I didn't start until much later in life. Yeah, exact opposite of doing of anything that would resemble entertainment or public speaking. I grew up kind of shy and reserved. The job that I got in the Air Force, I spent about 20 years in the Air Force, which is, it provide, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's so noble, fight for our country. No, man, I sat in a dark room and done analytical work and supported in that way. But really, like most people from small dead end towns that aren't making getting their college paid for in any way, they find a way out. And the military is the way out for a lot of us. And then you get in there and you know what it's like to be, you know what it's like to be poor and broke. You don't ever want to go back to it. So you end up staying because it's a guaranteed work and it's guaranteed paycheck and you're able to support yourself and your family as you go along. I spent about 20 years doing that. And towards the end of my time, I had a chance to come over to Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo. And that is where they have the tech school for my career field. And I had to learn how to be an instructor or a teacher and stand in front of people and talk to them for about 8 to 10 hours a day. And someone who's never done public speaking, that's a really uncomfortable situation to be thrown into. During that time I was going through the basic instructor course, learning how to do some of this stuff, I was reading Howie Mandel's book. And Howie Mandel, he made all this seem really easy. He's just like, I went to an open mic on a dare. I got up on stage and then I was asked to be the host next week. And then I was on a radio and everything led to another opportunity. Like every single thing he just said yes to. So he went from like on a dare to a host to a radio personality to General Hospital to Let's Make a Deal to now AGT. It was just all was just like pop, 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 pop. All you had to be willing to do was put in some work and say yes. It turns out it's a lot harder than that. But it did inspire me to at least give it a go. And there was nothing in San Angelo for that. There was no there was open mics, but only like truly gigging professional musicians. And if you're a comedian, like the comedian gets on stage and all the band members and their friends went outside to smoke with them. So the comedian was standing in front of an empty room. It was horrible. So what we did is I had a chance to go down to Killeen, Texas. And while I was there on a Wednesday night, I drove up to Austin and I did an open mic. And I stood for 4 minutes. I didn't vomit, didn't puke, got some smiles, and I really wanted that for San Angelo when I came back. So I set it up. I pushed out a lot of emails, did a lot of phone calls. Nobody wanted it because comedy's bad for business for the most part. And unfortunately, and particularly at the level that we're playing at and or were playing at, and a coffee shop said, okay, yes, I think that would be nice to have, but we are very Christian and conservative here and that's our clientele. So we do not want you to be, it needs to be able to fit that. And it turns out a lot of comedians don't want to play that game. They're about their freedom of expression and ability to say whatever they want to say and do what they need to do to get a reaction out of the room. So comedians weren't coming, but I did have a lot of instructors and a lot of students coming from the base that were just learning how to do public speaking. And it really wasn't stand-up comedy at first. It was more or less cool story bro type stuff. And it was fun. It was fun for what it was, but we were getting about 80 people in that little coffee shop every week. So it didn't take long before a music store shook my hand and said, "Hey, we'll uncuff you if you'll bring it over here." And when I went to the music store, they actually, all of a sudden comedians wanted to come out. The comedians that actually had some chops and were able to say what they wanted to say without constraint. And that was, you know, that whole freedom of speech thing. The grown up, the clapper versus I don't even know the name of the other one now. TikTok. So now you have the grown up version, and everybody loves it. We're able to sell it out, and still in a small community, we're only running one show a month. So we work our ass off writing as much as we can and practicing however we can to go do that one show a month, and we are blowing the doors off the place. A little bit later, I'm what I think really happened, and without being too long in this, is that I was the hub, and I was drawing. I had enough of a crowd to guarantee that when I brought people in, they had a great time performing. So people from Lubbock, people from Midland, people from El Paso, people were all willing to meet in this hub to perform in front of a very large crowd because they knew they were going to be and they're going to have that opportunity. And when you're not in Dallas and Austin and Houston, you don't get those shots. So I became a hub and I magnetized them to me. And when they got here, then I was able to make those connections. Now, fast forward 3 or 4 years, and now those people recognize my chops and recognize what I've done. And then they began to invite me out to go do things that allowed me to go on the road and start doing the thing. So instead of me traveling and trying to impress everybody everywhere I went, I forced them to come to me. And that's how I met them and shook their hands. And then eventually they invited me to go out that way. So so we went very, very micro and then macro. And now I'm able to tour around and do it pretty well. I've been at it for about 8 years, and I've been in most of the flyover states, driving around, being paid way too little, but getting my chops and growing my craft. So I'm excited. I'm excited for what we have going on with Cynthia, and I look forward to next week.
What was your MOS?
I was Air Force, and I was a 1-in-1 Alpha. So a 1-in-1 Alpha is geospatial intelligence analyst. So I sat in a dark room and I looked at stuff that I couldn't tell anybody about.
Didn't they give that to the Space Force?
Coincidentally, I teach that school, and it's still mostly Air Force, but I think our ISR, or I'm sorry, our satellite based assets. Yeah. I think we'll go that way. But as long as we still have a U-2 and a Reaper and things that fly within the airspace, I think that we'll have that. So it's going to be a little bit of a divide. And I can imagine that MOS will be, or AFSC will be split.
Okay. Yeah, I was services. I was the Air Force too. So I was just, it's kind of curious stuff when you've, find that like a lot of military people go to comedy. I mean, Chris Owens, Navy, he was MP. He was on the Chappelle show, and he was the Air Force Security Forces. Can't remember his name. What?
A lot of them do go to comedy or music, honestly. Are you a veteran as well, Jason?
No.
Okay. I know that we do have several veterans that are on songwriters, music and comedy both come from a broken place, and veterans definitely go through a lot of that. So it's an outlet. It's a therapeutic way for them to get out what is inside. And that's where some of the most beautiful and funniest entertainment comes from. And a lot of why we're doing what we're doing, because we all, like I said, we all know the Robin Williams story, and mental health is a huge, huge thing. I mean, COVID affected all of us, but it affected the entertainment business probably the most, because people weren't able to go out and gig. They weren't able to do anything. They had to like reinvent a lot of their lives, especially the people that were doing it full time. We're just now starting to get back from COVID. It's taken 3-4 years.
There's still people wearing masks, but you know, it's some of
in their
some,
car.
Well, some of the people you can understand only because they're wearing the mask because they have high anxiety and everything, or they don't feel comfortable with, you know, people and everything, that helps them out. But there's also people that still buy into the plandemic stuff. So, but I guess we've been going for an hour. If anything, I'll have you guys individually onto the show, and hopefully some people can get their. I'm guessing his phone died.
Right.
That's the reason.
Yeah.
He said his phone was about to die, and I told him to plug it in, and then we lost him.
But I'll have y'all guys on individually so we can get, you know, a more in-depth talk with each and every one of you, even though someone threw this together and I just went with it.
If it wasn't for Chris, it wouldn't have happened because I forgot all about it. Like, I'd be throwing a bunch of stuff together. It's always fun and it usually works out.
Yeah. That's why I love doing this type of stuff. Yeah, I have great friends that end up, you know, just through the podcast that I ended up talking to. I have a fan that just messaged all the time on this stuff. I was like, dude, why don't you have it on come on the show? And he was a Marine First Division, and he was in the first initial person in the invasion of Iraq. And it wasn't until like his third tour where he got blown up like 3 times there. I mean, the general that he was toting around was like, hey, how many times have you gotten blown up since then? He's like, oh, this is my first IED. He's like, well, this is my 6th, so you better suck it up, buttercup. And I was like,
yeah. it's wild to hear stories like that because I didn't realize this for a long time but veterans, like, I feel like for the most part we fall in the same grouping, but like I performed in Dallas at a function called Roll Call. They do it once a month, and all of the veterans, they come and they get, from all generations. So Korean War veteran, Korean War, Vietnam War, like all the way forward. And they had people from like the Korean War there, and they're sitting at the front table, and they have honor spots, and it's a whole thing. There's like 600 people in there. And every time you sat down at a table, they're like, yeah, I had half of my skull blowed off, and they scooped me up and took me home and put me back together. And then like they introduced me as a 20-year veteran, and I'm just like, I don't think it means the same as to me as it does these guys, because it's like because when you're sitting at the table, I don't say anything because I'm kind of like you kind of feel like a kid at the grown-up table. Like they're talking about getting blowed apart. And do you remember when that mortar came in and it wounded 18 of us? I was so glad to have walked away, but I would have given my life for any one of those guys that didn't make it. I'm just like, yo,
you didn't. I had the same thing happen to me because I did a honor flight with my dad because he's a Vietnam vet, and we flew in there, and there's this guy, older gentleman, he was in a wheelchair, and he was from World War II, but he flew in one of those gliders. Yes. And my dad's my dad. And he makes like inappropriate jokes. It's where I get my inappropriate jokes too. But he goes, "Is like, could you imagine being that old and being in the wheelchair?" I was like, "Dad, did you not hear his story? He flew gliders in World War II. The reason why he's in that wheelchair is because his balls are bigger than anyone around here. So just give him that." He's like, "Well, you're right."
No, but yeah, it's wild because we want to group ourselves in the same categories. Like, oh, you're a veteran. Thank you for your service. And they say that right in front of the guy who was literally fighting with bayonets in Vietnam. And you're just like, this guy, you immediately turn it over to that guy. But you know, I think that, I guess, do you have a loaded response when someone says, thank you for your service?
Yeah.
I usually, go ahead.
I I usually when someone says thank you for my service, it's like I just respond. It's like, no, I did it for you. And I just walk away, and it makes them feel better. And it's just one of those good responses and everything. But I was a cook. Yeah. I mean, the worst thing I had to do, and this is like pre 9/11. I went off base to go pick up donuts when I was in Kuwait, and I got shot at. That's my worst experience. When you're going for someone that's gone, like, well, I got blown up like 3 times, man. I've got like really, don't even know if I'm here or not sometimes. Like,
it's wild. Hey, but that's crazy though, because you said you're a cook, and like it's, and we downplay that, right? We downplay our spot. But like my grandfather was a cook, and then World War II cooked off, and then he was injured when a kamikaze hit his boat, you know, because he was a Navy cook, and I was like, so like no position's truly safe, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I had a friend of mine that I served with started living here in Wichita Falls from Abilene. And he was talking. I did the same thing. I was like, man, we were just cooking. He's like, dude, did you not hear that there was a missile strike in Iraq, one of the bases in Iraq, and like 14 people that worked in my career field just died? I'm like, God, you just don't like hear that much that we're still, you know, doing some crazy stuff, even though we're not considered like, you know, spec ops or 11 Bravo from the Army and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's sad that I have like two friends that worked in the Army, and they were infantry, and one was a mortarman, one was airborne, and I had more of a active career than they did.
Yeah,
it's really strange to me.
So, Jason, you thinking about the name of that name in that beard yet?
Oh yeah. We haven't talked about that. We're gonna
name it Hijinks.
Hijinks.
No, Hijinks. Everybody says that I look like Cody Jinks, and I have my hat on and sunglasses, and so my friend of mine, you know, he would introduce me as Tall Jinks, but then Casper McQuaid, he's a friend of mine. He knows Cody, and he's like, yeah, but he's a lot taller than Cody. And so he's like, why don't we call him Hijinks? So I call my beard Hijinks.
All right. That's good. That's way better than what I had for you. Cause I was like, if you get food in it, I mean, it already looks like a Wookiee. We can call it Chewy. Yeah.
I'm glad we established that. Now we can address his beard by its name.
So Hijinks.
Do we talk directly to the beard, or do we just, you know, it's kind of like the
remember thing. Every good man has a strong woman behind it, but every good beard has a strong man behind it. So I guess that's what we'll go with.
Yeah. It's all because of the Scottish. That's the only reason why I can grow it like this. Yeah, can you grow a beard, Chris?
I probably could, but I think I was in the service for over 20 years. So like I didn't, and I think that it would change a lot of self-image if I started growing a bunch of facial hair. And a lot of people retire and get that retirement beard, but my wife was not having it. So I'm going to keep the face that my wife likes.
Yeah. My wife told me so at one point I own my own business. And so when you own your own business, you can do whatever you want. You can grow your hair long, beard, whatever. And so my wife said, you can have a long beard and short hair, or you can have long hair and a short beard, but you can't have both, because when you have both, you look homeless. So I was like, well, I went ahead and went with the short hair so that people wouldn't keep putting money in my coffee cup.
But do you find the problem, or do you find that you get mistaken for homeless anyway? I think most artists do, because we walk around, or I don't know if you do, but like every now and then, like I found myself, I was in Akron, Colorado. All right. Akron, Colorado. And I was up there and I was walking to the venue, cause it was like, it was like -4 degrees, and I wanted to know what it was like to walk in cold weather because I live in Texas. So, like, and by the way, that was a mistake. It was only a block away. I thought I was going to die. But anyway, I'm walking, and I'm running my set in my head, but I'm also lipping it, maybe even saying it audibly. Now, I'm in a 1977 – I'm in, like, a 1977 old field jacket because I picked one up at a flea market. And I'm a stranger in town, and I'm walking like this, and I'm muttering and talking to myself. The only thing I was missing was a push cart with my stuff. So when I caught myself doing that, I realized how homeless I looked, and I will no longer judge a guy who's pushing a cart and talking to himself, because I know he's just still chasing his dream. He hasn't quite made it yet, but he's still just running his songs, running his lyrics, or running his act. And one day somebody's going to accidentally hear him, and even in that spot on that corner by the bus stop, he's going to get discovered, damn it.
Have you seen how Jamie Johnson looks now compared to the way he used to look when he went to Nashville? Completely different man. He looks like what's that guy that lives up in the mountains? The guy with the bear.
Oh,
Johnson.
Oh God!
Oh, Grizzly. No.
Yeah. He looks like Grizzly Adams.
Yeah,
that's funny.
It happens to us. We write songs. We go crazy.
Yeah. But didn't that happen? That's how Jewel ended up, because she was homeless for a while, and she ended up doing coffee shops and everything, and then she finally got paid.
Yeah, all that always sounds inspiring, and then like. Then I find the real truth of it is just because people are like, The Rock only had $7 in his account and then he blew up. I'm like, I don't know. Now then you talk about Sylvester Stallone, and he's just like, I was homeless and I had to sell my dog and I finally wrote a script and it got picked up. Okay, that's all sounds super inspiring. And then like some other comic, Dat Fan's just like, I was living in my car for a month in L.A. And I'm just like, okay, that all sounds cool. You made it. But for every one person that makes it off the street, like probably 100 others die, right? It's like literally die. So I'm just like, I'm probably never, and that might be why I may not catch the dream, because I'm not going to be the starving artist living out of my car on the corner of a street who gave up his family and gave up his job and gave up his livelihood to hopefully be noticed in a random bar in a city that I'm slowly dying in.
You know that you brought that up is I had went to a Steve-O show like back in 2014, like right when he was like first starting to go back to rehab and whatnot. And so then here, like a couple years ago, I saw that he was going to be in town and I was like, wait, he's not dead yet. Like, because when I saw him in 2014, he was rough, bro. Like he couldn't even stand up straight. Like he stood up, but he, you know, the chair that they give you, the taller chair, like he was standing up, but he was leaning on the chair. So he literally did his whole stand-up comedy bent in half. Like his show, he was leaning sideways on this thing as a prop. I'm like, if that wasn't there, he probably wouldn't even be able to stand up. Like he was that bad. So I went to go see him because I was like, you know, I'm surprised he's not dead. Like literally. And it was just absolutely amazing to see that he looked healthy. He looked happy. And his show is absolutely amazing. It was absolutely terrifying at the same time because he did a tour to give you the raw fucking truth of what he went through to become a famous comedian. And all of those shows that wanted him to push the extremes. And the fact that he like literally died 4 fucking times for the show. And those episodes, they wouldn't even air. They were like, yeah, that's too far. We can't air that. And so he did a tour that was literally like, these people pushed me to fucking death and then wouldn't even show you that I fucking went that far. Fuck that. I'm showing you. And they did. They showed graphically all of the uncut shit that the TV stations wouldn't show. And it was hard to watch, man. Yeah, but
that was his latest tour that he just did.
Yeah. The bucket list tour, right?
Yeah. It was really hard to watch. I mean, because you know that you had those episodes where he had like the entire fucking tanks of Whippets and he was huffing 4 tanks at a time. And then all of a sudden just flopped, like, you know, started He flopped like a fish over on the couch. Like, he literally fucking died, and you watched him die on TV. Like, it was a wild tour, and I'm glad that I got to see it. But it's just, it's so crazy, like, the reality of how many hoops you have to fucking jump through. And then when you jump through them, you get told that, you know, oh, you did that too well. Like, I'm sorry you fucking died, but we're not going to show that. You're not going to get paid for dying. Sorry, bro. Like, we asked you to do some stupid shit, and now we're not going to, you know, like, it's crazy, because that's the kind of thought process around a lot of entertainment. Like, they want this, they want this, they want this, they want this, and then when you do it, they're like, yeah, that's not fucking what we want.
Yeah, well, and it's also crazy crazy too that fame is so fleeting, because, like, I work with people in San Angelo all the time, which, by the way, San Angelo is not an entertainment mecca, but they come through here and they work with us, because we're like the first sign of civilization between, I don't know, maybe El Paso, San Antonio, and Dallas. Like,
literally, you your guys' side of Texas is tumbleweeds.
Yeah. You got to park a bus somewhere. And if you can make some money, why not do it? It's kind of how they get here. But when they get, and so the benefit of me being in a small town is in San Antonio or Dallas, I would literally be competing with 3,000 other comics for I don't know, 30 spots a week, right? Yeah. So, like, you can go to open mics, but if you want on a pro show, you're not getting on it, because you will have to go to war with people who will kneecap you, like Tonya Harding in the parking lot, right? But here, there's only 6 comics, and I'm at the top of the stack. So when someone comes through, who I am the host, or I am the feature, or I'm the guy opening for them. So I get, so I don't have as many opportunities, but the opportunities I get do afford me the ability to work with the bigger talent. And I've been really blessed by that. And Mike Shields in MSPN is really partnering with him has been a real blessing, because I tell people that he's my best friend, but, like, when he's in town, he sleeps at my house, and vice versa if I go out there. So at this point, we're at least cousins. At least we got to be family,
right? But Michael's a really cool guy to work with. Like, he's so chill. Like, he's just like, all right, Cynthia, just tell me where you need me, I'll be there. Like, yeah. I've known Michael for, like, probably almost 15 years now. He was one of the first comedians. I don't know if you've had the pleasure of meeting Rodney Hood, but we had opened up a comedy club. And I still to this day say that's, like, one of the biggest jokes of my fucking life. We opened a comedy club together, and Michael Shields was one of our first comedians. But like, we did a trial run to where, like, every other week we had a show so that we could get everything going. And we made such an impact in the community in the 3 shows that we had that the owner of the local comedy club that had always been there actually punched one of our business partners in the face at the local gas station. Rodney was there for that. I wasn't. But, like, we had some steam going about our comedy club, but at that time, both Rodney and I were, like, really bad as far as, like, you know, we were in our full blown drinking phase at that point, and we would have killed each other if we had remained business partners. So we decided it best to resolve the comedy club. But Michael and I have stayed in touch. I mean, Rodney and I, like, I don't really talk to him very often, but we're still on good terms and everything. But I've stayed in touch with Michael, and we've done events all over the place. He did our songwriters event, the Texas State Songwriter, our first ever event in June out in Bowie. He's done other venues for me as well here in Texas, and he's an amazing individual to work with. Like, he also has all of those bigger plugs, like you were saying. Like, you get to meet so many people. Like, he's, like, the names that he's been able to share a stage with is just insane. And we will definitely be having him up here at the Hilltop Barn soon. I think he might be coming.
Well, I'm glad that me and him have such a tight knit relationship. Number one, he's just a good dude. And I think that if I was to quit comedy, I think that we would still be probably best buds. But I think it's for the past 8 years, I would say that the opportunities I've been given, I have definitely benefited from his connections, because when he brings them in and he's doing the thing, like, I'm his immediate guy that is opening or hosting or doing whatever, and that puts me right in the mix, and I get a chance to sit with these people and have conversations and go out to Denny's with them afterwards and hear their experiences and what they've learned from and some various other things, or just bullshit with them while they eat their random things. But it's weird. or there's like even odd things. Like I realized that some of the more famous comedians, they've gone vegan or gone close to vegan. So you sit there and you're at Denny's, and Denny's isn't known for its vegan stuff per se, but you can get just egg whites. You can get this, you can get that. They do accommodate the best they can, but it's wild. But I don't know why I got on the food tangent. I was thinking more or less to just being able to sit and be around the bigger fish helps you grow an awful lot.
Yeah. Jason, what kind of road stories do you have?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't have really a whole lot of road stories because, I mean, I just play around DFW here, and I got a day job during the day, and so I got to kind of stick around here. So I didn't do the whole reason why I didn't move into doing music like in clubs and restaurants and everything is because since my godfather was pretty famous, I saw how he wasn't at home a lot, and I knew that if I got into that industry, I wouldn't be at home a lot. So I have three kids, and so I just decided, you know, that I would stay home and I would raise them. But my youngest now is 16, so we can take more time to go out and go to all the different venues and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I've just been doing it for 2 or 3 years, but not a whole lot of road stories yet.
Well, that's that old avenue where a rich guy goes up to a fisherman and he just fishes like for 4 or 5 hours a day. And then he goes home with his family. But the rich man goes like, well, if you do this, you can be super rich. You can have like, you know, richness and everything. He's like, but I will waste time and I would rather have time with my family. I mean, I can understand if you want to be like, hey, I want my hobby to be, you know, one of the best podcasts in the world, but you know, I'm not going to sacrifice that with for, you know, family and whatnot. So I totally understand that.
Yeah. And I was able to grow my ability, you know, not only musical ability, but vocal ability. I am kind of fighting against age because the new people, quote unquote, in the industry, they're more in their 20s, but I'm getting connections with the older people in the industry that respect, you know, what I've done and that can see my talent. I mean, I was just talking to somebody this past week and I didn't even mention it, but he's a really big songwriter in Texas. He's kind of, you know, kind of a legend in Texas. And just out of the blue, he was like, hey, you want to co-write sometime? I was like, yeah, I'd love to. He's like, all right, well, here's my number. You got your phone, you know, jot it down. And I was like, but opportunities like that, I mean, I wouldn't have known him had I not known some of the other people. And so, yeah, I mean, it's everybody's kind of like a close family, especially in the, I don't know if it's that way with the comedy. It sounds like it is. But in the music industry, yeah, I mean, it's everybody's kind of real close like that. And somebody knows somebody famous and whatnot. But yeah, I've been offered a bunch of opportunities to open up for some people. I just opened up for Casper McQuaid at a private party, and Casper's one of Cody Jinks's best friends, and Cody's tearing it up, and Casper just dropped a new album. And so, yeah, I mean, when you know all these people and they're in the right position and you've put the chops in for the last 20 years. So <Yeah. clears throat> the business part of it, I'm learning. I'm getting a little bit, you know, I don't know the word I'm looking for. I'm starting to learn the business side of it a little bit more, because that's completely different than sitting down in a room and writing a song or everything like that. The business side sometimes can get a little hairy, but I'm trying to do my best and be a nice guy and, you know, kind of stay out of the political stuff. But yeah,
it really does. I was talking to somebody that I have so many people that are like, the guy whose phone died is one of them. Chris is another one. Like, they're like, well, you just be you're good at what you do. Just be our booking agent. Just like be like, and I did that. And it is such a political freaking thing to do, because, you know, you spend 2 or 3 months tracking down this booking manager for this venue, and you finally get, you know, 2 or 3 dates. And then one artist goes in and he's in a shitty shitty mood, and all of a sudden, you know, nobody in your team is allowed to go back to that venue again, because that's how it works. It's not an easy business. There's a lot of, that's one of the things that I loved about working with Banded when we did the event at Horace Hall, because all the emotion and all that other crap is not involved in the situation. It's kind of basically like you have a divorce mediator, you know, here's me. I want this show to be amazing. Here's the venue owner. He wants this show to be amazing. Our ideas of amazing might not be the same. And our ideas of how to come around bringing upon amazing might not be the same. And if we try to negotiate with each other and make each other see the our side of the story, it's just going to be a bunch of conflict like you would in a divorce hearing. But if we both have, you know, we realize that we agree that we disagree, and we say, hey, Destiny, can you help us figure out a resolution? And boom, she's like, hey, well, you sound like an idiot and you sound like an asshole. This is what really needs to happen. And then we work it out. And there's no... you're never coming back to my venue again.
But you understand, like the guys that are beating down the road doing all the work, the reason they're so desperate to have somebody represent them is because comics particularly, we're told to say yes to everything. Like coming up is just like every opportunity to get on stage is what you have to do. It doesn't matter if it makes sense or not. You need to find a way to get on that stage. So you get to saying yes. Now every comic behind you is also saying yes. A lot of comics ahead of you are also saying yes. So it waters down the ability to earn anything if you're asking for yourself. People don't want to pay attention unless you have somebody representing you. If you have somebody representing you, then it brings a sense of validity, and then they start answering your cost. So like the or they start answering it better, because it turns out as long as I'm still willing to drive all the way to Akron, Colorado for $300 in a room, trust me, I'd rather pay you 30% than come out of pocket to drive. That was 11 hours in one direction. I drove 22 hours. I spent 1 hour on stage. I lived on, and when I do that, you live on granola bars. If you want to come out ahead, you sleep in your car. So you become a homeless person for the next 48 hours. If you want to go do that 1 hour show to be a headliner and grow your chops. And if you stay local, well, there's enough competition in Texas that you don't really get a chance to do that. You get to practice your chops 10 minutes at a time. So if you want to perform 45 minutes to an hour and start showcasing that you can do that and be that valid go-to guy, you have to be willing to hit the road. Unfortunately, it doesn't pay unless you have someone that is representing you. So I think that your representative may at some point be like, hey, you don't have to say yes to everything. We don't say yes to everything. If it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. Right. But the artists will always find a way to justify it in their head and make it make sense. So when somebody says, hey, we got a spot for here in Lubbock, we can give you gas money. Their idea of gas money is $40. Well, now I'm about to drive for six hours, 3.5 hours up, 3.5 hours back. I'm gonna make $40 because I have a chance to be on stage and shake some hands with some people. So you gotta have somebody has to bring common sense to the table, and that's why we're so desperate to find it.
Right. And I definitely get that part of it. And I do have people that I've been delegating stuff to, and that might be something that I delegate, because so my experience with it is, like you said, yes and no, because what would happen is the venue would ignore this individual. And then I would reach out, and then what would happen was the venue would contact the individual, and Cynthia would be wasting her efforts. Like, I would not be getting compensated because I didn't book it. The venue contacted the artist. So I guess that happens to be with my contracting and what I need to do, because when I was booking, I went off of a word, and you can't a lot of times run business off of people's word. Like, it's not today. Unfortunately, I wish it still worked like that. I need to work on getting that together, and then I'll just have my publicist, because she spends like hours. She wants stuff to do anyway. So,
yeah. Well, I've spent time on the casting couch too, so it's understandable. I get where you are.
Yeah. So there are a lot of events coming up. We have February 3rd, Kinfolk is going to be out at the barn. That's just going to be just a come out and listen to the jam. That second Saturday in February, I believe it's the 10th, Amber Fireball Franzen, which was our third place. She tied for third place for our championship finale. She's going to be out there. I know March 9th, Braden Southard, our social media mascot, is going to be out there. Once a month, every second Saturday of every month, jokes and strokes for folks. And then we do have some random stuff popping up. I know they have some midget wrestling that's happening. We have all of our events down at Horace Hall, but you guys can find them by going to TexasStateSongwriters.com/events. All of the tickets for all of our events are for sale already. And there is limited seating. So
link in the bio. So
yeah, I'm really excited about our partnership with Horace Hall because he brought up, he was like, Cynthia, our crawfish, catfish, Crawford, something totally awesome is happening.
It comes from water. That's all you
connected. Boil is going to be happening on the same day as your songwriters. Is that okay? And I was like, I mean, most venue owners wouldn't ask if that was okay. They would just be like, hey, guess what? This is happening. And so I thought it was cool that they did that. And not only did they do that, but they said they usually get about 150 people that come through for that. And the owners are like, so we have a structure on how we do our shows. So we do like a percentage goes to charity, a percentage goes back to the artist for prize money, a percentage goes back to me for the endless hours of stuff that I do, and then a percentage goes to the venue. And so what they told me today when I was on the phone call, which almost made me late for this, was that they're going to take all of the tickets from their crawfish boil and break it up the same way that we do our shows. So because they feel that helping us grow is, it's just absolutely amazing. The people that we have working with us are just absolutely amazing. And they're sweetening the deal by giving away 2 pounds of crawfish for anyone who buys the ticket through us instead of just going to the gate, which I mean, most venues wouldn't be doing that. Like that's how important our vision is. That's how much people are supporting our vision. Like they're willing to sacrifice their own revenue to support what we're doing. And that's huge to be able to sweeten the pot for our artists and to be able to really push what we're doing as far as it's not just a songwriter's competition anymore. It's literally an entire movement. We plan on creating a mini stockyards out at the Hilltop Barn. They have 100 acres. You can come out there now. And like I said earlier, it's just like going to a party at your grandma's house. You can bring an air mattress, find a spot to sleep on the venue floor. You can bring a tent, sleep outside. You can sleep in your car. We don't care. Bring a horse trailer, a camper. Just come and have a great time. Support the nonprofits in the community that we're raising awareness for. Enjoy the artists. You know, get to meet them. Get your pictures with them. I mean, Jason's already talked about all the famous people he knows. Chris talks about all the famous people he knows. You never know when these two are going to be the next famous person that you know, and you will have been able to get a selfie. We're going to have a selfie area where you can, you know, get, I mean, that whole venue is beautiful and you can take a selfie anywhere. I'm not going to go through the extra effort to make a selfie spot. You can take a selfie anywhere. But it's just amazing. Like, a lot of the stuff that we do out there, like our songwriters retreat that we're going to be doing, it's all geared around, you know, making the entertainment industry a better experience for people who are in the entertainment industry. They're nickel and dimed on every single corner. They are, you know, like Chris was just saying, you know, you got to do this, this, and this. This is how we want our stuff. Like, this gives them an opportunity to just perform without all of the pressure. Like, it's like, hey, you're having a comedy show at grandma's house. Like, your grandma, you know, and some of them might be your grandma's really freaking cool because of the shit that's said, but that's the kind of environment, that's the kind of feel. It's a very peaceful and tranquil place to even be. We plan on, like I said, making a mini stockyards, having a square out there with tiny homes around the square where we have vendors, and we plan on making a village of tiny homes to where anyone that's in. So like, let's say Chris is playing the homeless comedian gig and he doesn't have any pets or any kids and he's solo. Why would he have to pay $800 to $1,200 a month to stay somewhere? He could just come stay in our little entertainer village. And, you know, $400 or $500 a month, I'm not sure exactly, but everything included, be in a network, like literally live in a community that supports the arts. That alone is going to do so much for so many people. And we want to turn that If you guys hear the screaming in the background, it's because we ran over our time and the Cowboys game is on. we have, I might have lost my train of thought. I was like, oh, that was loud.
Y'all think I'm actually paying attention to you when I'm actually on the NFL network looking at the fucking scores.
Right, we're gonna have to get it shorts. So we eventually want to have a program, and I plan on making this Texas State Songwriters Championship. Slow down, Cynthia. Nonprofit, because that's gonna help a lot of different reasons. Help for a lot of different reasons, but we plan on having these tiny homes out there, and then eventually having a program to where a business can sponsor an entertainer into the program, and they get to live there for free for the first 3 months and just work on the development of their passion. Just solely focus on your passion. So whether you're brand new at doing comedy or music, or you're brand new, or you just, you've hit a wall, or you just have an amazing business that wants you to go to the next level, any reason. So the first 3 months you would focus on your passion. And so we would have like developmental classes that focus on writing development, speech development, stuff like that for the first 3 months. And then the second 3 months you would work on business development, sales techniques, mindset training, income thermostat, and how to break that barrier that you set upon yourself so that you can get to the next level. And then obviously like helping with booking and stuff like that, because that's going to be the second 3 months. And then you'll either graduate to a tiny home that's on the property or find a place to go for yourself. But there's a lot of amazing things going on with our vision, and we're already networking with multiple states. We have songwriter showcases and competitions getting put together in Illinois and Florida already. I have someone that I'm talking to in Oklahoma. So that state might be the next one since it's close. And we're excited about it. So you don't have to be a Texas songwriter or a Texas comedian to get with us and use some of the tools that we have for our artists and development, or our support network. We're here for everybody worldwide, whether you're a songwriter or a comedian or a fire breather or a sword swallower, we're here to support you. So,
well, like she said, we're hitting that 1 hour and 30 minute mark, and I can hear the screaming. I looked at the scores and I found out why your boyfriend's screaming. Cowboys got a touchdown. So. Anyways, everybody, all the descriptions of what she was saying and the venue and the location will be in the description in the bio. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for watching, and goodbye.
Adios.